Hello and welcome back to a 4 a.m. What time is it, Marcus Thompson?
420.
420. What a start to the offseason. It is 420 a.m. in TD Garden, Boston. Last Warriors All 82 podcast of the year.
So technically it's Friday, and I know you don't smoke, but I'm going to get you high today. Chris Tucker from Friday.
I'm
Ice Cube in that situation, though. You more smoky than me.
Okay. There was a lot of alcohol consumption and cigar smoke filling the Boston Garden. The Warriors won the title. They've won a fourth title in the last 8 years. This is the first one since 2018. We don't need to get into all the mechanics of Game 6 and how they won at this point. I do not have a box score in front of me. We don't need it. You basically just get to the celebration. Essentially, it's Howard Beck wanders over for...
Are you potting?
We are now... Yes, we are podcasting at 4:20 a.m. How are you?
It.
How are you, Howard?
Hello, Warriors fans. I'm tired. I'm wiped. I'm ready to collapse. These two should be also... You should appreciate the sheer dedication that Marcus Thompson and Anthony Slater have to be giving you guys a podcast at this hour on no sleep. After a very long season, so.
And now you get a writer's credit.
Yeah. Do I get royalties or something?
That'd be not great. At all.
You got sub credit on the Athletics. All right. So congrats.
Continue potting. Safe travels. I'm out.
All right, Howard Beck.
Howard Beck.
Have a good one. We will see you probably in Las Vegas.
Take care, guys.
It's 4:20. There's Howard still here. There's still writers here. The team lingered for a while. I believe they're still next door.
They're
probably
still partying. Yeah.
They're still partying. So yeah, let's just kind of get into obviously just what this means from a legacy standpoint, but also just the post game scene. And I'd almost start with like this one. You knew this one was gonna hit because we've been around this climb back, but Steph Curry. Let's just start with Steph. On the court, there's still over a minute left, and he's crying.
I didn't see it, but it looked like it might have been. But, to see the replay, it's like, yo, he was crying. Yeah. And play is still going on, and he's, hugging his dad on the court while the play is still going on. And he was overcome. And there was a couple of moments where he kept putting his hands over his head, like he was in disbelief, like, I can't believe this is happening. He had a couple free throws, where fouling intentionally, before he goes to the line, he kind of walks under the basket with his hands under his head. And Draymond, for the last, real defensive stop, has to come grab him and say, hey, because he's on the side, doubled over. He had to take his mouthpiece back out and put it back in because he tucked it. He thought it was done.
Yeah, there was 1:03 left. I remember the exact time. And somebody on the Celtics was at the line. And Draymond had to come over you got to, chip this guy on a box out here.
Yeah, Draymond was like, it ain't over yet. And then they cleared the bench. And that's where it was like, okay, this is done. And he really hit him. But, in that moment, you could see, this championship was not – built this year. This is 3 years of in the making, right? This championship run began watching Toronto celebrate in the last game at Oracle. Remember they all came out and they watched it. They didn't go back, they watched it. But they've been essentially aiming to get back here to this moment and prove they can do it. And there's been so much talk and nobody's heard it more than Steph, who is constantly in these conversations about where he ranks and where he stands and constantly being slighted. But it was interesting to see it all hit him, right? For a group of guys who've been saying, we know we can do this, we know we can do this, that moment was you could see they felt oh, man, we really did it. we really pulled it off.
Yeah, I mean, it's the doubts. I'm not talking about external doubts. I'm talking about internal doubts over the last few years. There were several times, if you're them, it's pretty obvious to just wonder if it's even possible to get back here. And the other part, before we kind of get to the post game scene, how about him going up 22 with still 18 minutes left in the game and pointing at the ring finger? That was bold by him. And I mean, he sealed the deal, so it won't lead to any criticism. But it's, when he does the night-night celebration, usually you're okay, there's you know, or you do the math, they're up 15 with, you know, 2 minutes left. Like, they're not losing. He did it up 22, but with 18 minutes left.
You know what? I think, and I'm coupling this with game four, first quarter, when he's screaming at the fans way earlier than we ever thought we'd see him. I think he knew they couldn't guard him. I think he knew it. He knew, as long as they can't guard me, we're going to beat this team. Like, I think he knew that. And there was something happened in game three where they came back and it was like, okay, we can beat this team. And then Celtics got hot in the fourth quarter and kind of fell apart. But something about that, I think Steph knew. He knew it. He only does that when he knows it, right? He only does a night-night when he knows it's over.
Well, it's supreme confidence.
Yeah, I just think he knew that he had felt the best that they had. He knew, like, even with the drop, even if they got out of the drop coverage and you know, trying to trap him, blitz him, I think he figured out, I still can get my shots on that. I still know what to do. But I think in the end, like, there was no doubt from Steph Curry, he was the best player in the series. They could not guard him. And essentially that means the series was in his hands. And I think he knew that. And we saw two examples of Curry talking trash way before it was over. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wonder how much of it has to do, you know, it has to do some of it, but I wonder how much of it has to do with, you know, talk of him being a front runner and all that. But we've never seen him be out this early with his trash talk. But I think in his mind, he knew, like, they cannot guard me. Marcus Smart can't guard me, or I can get away from Marcus Smart and go cook whoever else I want.
The other thing is, like, he was just so clearly the best player in this series. And, you know, part of that wasn't probably just, hey, I know they can't guard me, but it's like, hey, I know we can guard Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
You know, it's what he was thinking. And to me, they solved this Celtics team. And I know, look, there were times where it felt it's the bigger team, it's the younger team. In some ways, you felt like it might be the Celtics might be the better team. But by the middle of this three-game win streak, to close it out, it became clear, like, Warriors had outsmarted them, you would say, outmaneuvered them, outcoached them. And, I mean, like, they fully controlled this game six on the road. And, like, at this point, after a 4-2 series win, like, that was pretty convincing.
Yeah, it was, especially how it started, right? It was, like, 14-2. And, you know, interestingly enough, against the Celtics, right, of all teams, this was a team where their best punch did not hurt the Warriors. Like, we've seen it, right? We've seen it beat them in fourth quarter, but they come into on the road in Memphis and Dallas, and they were done. Like, they got blitzed and it was over. It was 55 in Memphis, and in Dallas, like, it was 29 before the scrubs, like, made it interesting. But we've seen them kind of take that punch and wobble and be like, all right, we'll come back next game. But in game three and then tonight, They were like, yeah, nah, we'll take it, and then we'll answer. You know, I wonder how much of that is fatigue, and, you know, how much of that is, like, the Celtics. And they just knew, man. They knew, and we've seen this before. This is literally how it happened in the Memphis series. They got down 2-1. They figured it out, won the series. They got down 2-1 against Cleveland, figured it out, and won the series. So then they get down 2-1. They win the next two. So it makes all the sense in the world why they came in here thinking, we got this, because we've seen what happens when Steve Kerr figures a team out. Like, that's pretty much ball game.
Yeah, okay, so I do want to kind of get to, well, first of all, what you wrote about Steph, Clay, and Draymond, and just what this meant from a legacy standpoint for those three.
Yeah, and I basically put them in the pantheon with the other great trios, you know, Magic, Kareem, Worthy, Bird, Parrish, McHale. You know, I mean, even Jordan, Pippen, Rodman, like, they, you got, when you mention those, you got to mention these guys now. I mean, they've won four championships, two of them without Kevin Durant, and just how improbable it all was. Like, these dudes weren't supposed to be these dudes, right? Not them. And
7th pick, 11th pick, 35th
pick, yeah. And there's just, these dudes have forged an entire legacy. Like, I mean, it's really crazy when you think about it. I was talking to Steph about it, and he just stopped. He looks, and he's like, come on, man. He's like, you know, 4 years at Michigan State, Davidson and Washington State, like
Washington State,
right? Like it is so random, but that's what they did tonight. They not only ended every conversation about whether or not their first championship was real, or whether they're legit, but they're doing things that legends do, and they did it in Boston. You know, a place where nobody wins a championship except for the 85 Lakers. That's it. The 85 Lakers, the only team to win a title in Boston. And they just came in here and treated the Boston aura like it was Memphis. I mean, that's pretty impressive, though.
Yeah, they went 2-1 in this series in Boston. Yeah, I mean, look, four titles, but also six final strips. And if you think about the two times they didn't win the title, it's the 73-win season, which is a historic season in its own right. Plus, they went to Game 7 of the finals. And, you know, there are various situations within that you know, it almost went their way. And then the other one is the Toronto finals, where KD gets the Achilles and Clay gets the ACL, where, you know, I think we'd all mostly agree, like, if they are fully healthy in that series, you know, that's probably a win. So it's really six, like, title-level seasons and four titles to show for it. It probably feels like the correct amount, like four. And the other thing, and, you know, gets to a little bit of what I wrote about. I wrote about more of, I guess, the management side, the Joe Lake of the Bob Myers part of all this. But this doesn't seem like one last ride. This seems like the start of Bulls' second time. The Vegas has labeled them the favorites next season. I'm not sitting here thinking like another three-peat is on the way, but the window's open.
I mean, you could see some of these young players walking around like, you know who thinks the window's wide open? Jordan Poole. Andrew Wiggins, right?
Kuminga, even.
Jonathan Kuminga. James Wiseman is like, James Wiseman was walking around like, hey.
You mean James Wiseman, NBA champ?
Yeah, right. NBA champ James Wiseman. They are looking at this like, hey, and we were just starting, right? That's how they're looking at it. We're just starting this. There's talk about, you know, I'm talking to people who are like, yo, Steph's going to play till he's 40, right? Like, he's seeing this and he's like, yo, let's go. And like, if you start imagining there's a better version of Clay on the other side of this, right? Over.
Well, you know, they've said he's going to be like, as he gets more time under his belt, he's going to like, the body's going to feel better and he's going to play better defensively, particularly. That's because that's where he's probably felt weakest compared to his old form. And he was good defensively in this series.
He was great, especially these last three games. It's the shot that, you know, betrayed him a bit. And I think that's a bit of thirst, right? He's just thirsty for him. He's hunting.
And that's also clear. Like, he goes hot and cold up with the shot. But, like, I just didn't know we'd see that level of playoff defense from him ever again. And I wouldn't say it was prime Klay Thompson, but, like, he was, like, a positive defensive player in the series for sure.
No question, especially the last three games. You start seeing this together. There's talk of how this might unlock a new level of Andrew Wiggins, right, where – you know, now his whole DNA is different now because he just won a championship and was a critical player for them, right? You know, so two plus years of them trying to get it out of him and prod him and show him the way, and now he's like, you know, Neo, when he realized he was the one in the Matrix, he's like, oh. And if Wiggins has that, if he can become that, I mean, these are pillars for another run. That don't mean you're going to win it, right? Obviously, we've seen...
It's just a contending window. Yes,
it's just that they're in the mix. Like, and here's what we knew. I mean, we said this on the pod for 2 years now, right? Like, even before it was a matter of win a championship. If you get this team into the playoffs with Steph, Clay, and Draymond healthy, like, now you got to beat them. Who can actually beat them, right? And there were even some teams we thought could beat them. But they just ran through the playoffs, right? And nobody could beat them. Still, after all these years, nobody could beat them.
Nobody took them to seven.
Nobody took them to seven, which is a crazy thought. They've been to they had two seven-game series since 2012 or 2013.
They went 5-6, 5-6.
Houston, they took them to seven. In OKC. OKC took them to seven. And obviously Cleveland took them to 7-3. Three during eight, like, that's...
Well, and Toronto beat him in six.
No, just took them. Yeah, the teams that beat them clearly took them. But yeah, it's just they're just so tough to beat. Like, you got to be great to beat them. And we knew that it's a puncher's chance that is more than just a puncher's chance. They proved that, like, this is a legitimate thing. You have to beat them. And the other interesting part about this run is you did see some flaws in them, right? Which means now they kind of know where to shore up what they need. So now if they have some contingency plans for when Draymond's not playing well, when Klay's not playing well, even when Steph is not playing well, or you need him to sit, right? You've kind of got some contingency plans, which only makes them even better. I love, you see Klay was talking about he's going to retweet Jaren Jackson Jr.'s strength in numbers, right? I mean, but they might be bringing it back, though. You start throwing in Kuminga and Moody and see who they can keep as, you know, a free agency.
So that goes along the lines, again, of kind of what I was writing where, you know, I got Bob and Joe, and the story will be up on the website, but, you know, basically saying, like, we're going to try to bring people back. It's going to get expensive.
Who they got to bring back? Who's a must?
Looney. Especially with the Wiseman situation. I mean, Wiseman's basically a rookie in his third season.
Plus, you just can't – I mean, if somebody offers Looney a bunch of money, okay. Like, I get it. Somebody want to give him 2 for $40?
2 for $40?
I'm just saying, like, it's got to be a crazy number for you to not match on Looney. I'm just saying, for what he's meant to the franchise.
What are Mike Brown's Sacramento Kings or Kenny Atkinson's Charlotte Hornets willing to offer defensive anchor?
Exactly. I feel like, man, Looney's earned the right for a decent contract and to come back. So, to me, man, I just can't imagine you parting with Looney after paying Kelly Oubre.
So, I mean, the big questions are Looney, Gary Payton II.
Gary Payton II is the other one I think you got to figure out a way to keep.
Yeah, that's unrestricted.
I would say Bitcoin, but.
Yeah, that's unrestricted free agency. Then the other big questions are, you know, Wiggins' extension looms and what he's earned in these playoffs. Jordan Poole, who to me, you know, I know Jordan Poole's probably the one that's been talked about the most, but he's the one that, like, you almost can figure out last because it's extension eligibility on a rookie year. He's under contract next season, and even if he goes to free agency, it's restricted free agency. The Draymond extension decision is kind of a looming topic, I guess, but you know, Payton and Looney are the unrestricted, but they made a ton of money in these playoffs, and
they're gonna make a ton more.
Yeah, and it's just also what I wrote about the, you know, kind of somewhat of the validation of the win now, develop now plan, not at least the one side of it, and I go back to a conversation I had with Joe Lacob after the draft. You know, they draft Kuminga and Moody, and basically that was the loudest stamp of, like, we're not only not trading, you know, these prime assets, the two lottery picks in a loaded draft for veteran help, which is probably what the Stars wanted, but they're also, remember, it was like Davion Mitchell, Chris Duarte, like, could they go get win-now pieces?
The old young players. Yeah.
It was like, no, two teenagers with, like, high upside that need to be developed. So that
add to your other, yeah, basically, teenager.
So that was, like, to me, that was the, like, I guess, like, real big checkpoint this season where they said, no, we are doing this ambitious plan that, you know, if it doesn't work out this season, they're going to get pretty heavily criticized for. But part of their rationale on that, I remember Joe Lacob said it at the time. I did kind of what became a controversial interview with him afterwards where he basically said, one of the quotes, which I put in my story tonight, was, if we don't win it, yes, I believe we can win it all, is what he said when I asked him still. And he said, and if we don't, like, blame Steph Curry, blame Klay Thompson, blame Draymond Green, he said, blame himself, blame Bob Myers, and then he said, and blame Andrew Wiggins. I remember even people at the time, like, Andrew Wiggins, he's roping Andrew Wiggins into that.
Yes.
But his belief was like, look, I've paid 4 maxes. Those 4 max players need to be good enough.
Yeah.
And where they were correct, and they, you know, they say it now, but also if you go back, he said it then, is that their belief is that Andrew Wiggins was the 4th star. And Andrew Wiggins in these playoffs was probably their 2nd best player, certainly in the last 2 rounds.
I mean, is that not the ultimate flex, though? I mean, jeez, Andrew Wiggins was incredible for – I mean, look, no – like, last year, they were just begging the dude to take over the second unit. Like, it was like, yo, can you be more aggressive? Like, can you? To the point where it's like, all right, never mind. Never mind. Jordan Poole, the second unit is yours. Right? Like, that. They went from that to this dude literally being, I mean, pivotal. Not just like a, not like a good player. Like, they don't win the series without him. They're not in the finals without him, right?
Currently, like, Jason Tatum's over there having, like, somber press conferences as the internet is going, like, Wiggins locks you up.
It's shot. It's done. Like, he can't wait for the season to start again because he's going to hate us all summer because of Andrew Wiggins.
He's going to be watching film of these finals when it's, like, 22 in his grill.
It's unbelievable. And you know what? If I were them, I'd probably flex even harder because, you know, I mean, they called it. They called that Wiggins would fit like this. I do think, and I did mention this in my piece, I do think that's also a credit to, like, Steph, Clay, Draymond, and how they play, how they bring dudes in. And if you just show them, like, yo, I'm willing to do it. I'm willing to do what it takes, then you can fit with them, right? Like, it can ride. And the crazy part is Wiggins has shown that the entire time. And to his credit, but man, like that might be, you start listing like the top 10 moves in Warriors history. Dude, the Wiggins acquisition is going to be way up there because it actually produced a championship.
Yeah. And Jonathan Kuminga. I mean, if Kuminga becomes.
I mean, it's crazy. If I was Joe, dude, I'd be butt naked on top of TD Garden talking about, I told you.
He wasn't butt naked, but he had the champagne dress. He was limping tonight, by the way. He's dealing with something, but.
Bob Myers was closer to butt naked than Joe Lake.
Bob Myers was barefoot. I actually put my lead in my stories. Bob Myers, he was barefoot walking around.
I was like, dude, what the hell kind of suit you had on that you can't get champagne showered for a title? How many suits do you have? Like, he was like, nah, I can't get that suit wet. So he put on a shorts and a t-shirt to go into the locker room.
He was basically seemed like he was at a summer pool party.
Yes, he had the towel over his shoulder, right?
Yeah, towel over his shoulder, like almost like a pool shirt, yeah. Some like athletic short pants, and like straight up barefoot, walking around the parquet floor. Like doing interviews, by the way. He's like doing interviews on NBA TV.
He's the only dude whose suits are too good for a championship shower.
And so I walked over to him, and he's like, you know, he's got the champagne like flowing through the hair, and he's sitting there. I thought he had, because he had a, I guess you call it a chalet, because Steve Kerr.
You call it a chalice, right?
Yeah. So, well, Steve Kerr came over and was like, you got a gold chalet? And he had what looked like a champagne bottle. I was like, oh, nice. Like, you got Moet or something? It was Michelob Ultra.
Michelob, yes. And Steve poured it in the cup like it was some fancy one. The way he gripped it, like he was popping bottles.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
I've been trying to eat in more often lately, so I signed up for Home Chef. I've had a few packages come in, and being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over all the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, even for someone like me who isn't making it onto Top Chef anytime soon. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what you're making ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering my listeners 18 free meals, plus free shipping on your first box, and free dessert for life at homechef.com/plus. That's homechef.com/plus for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. Homechef.com/plus. Must be an active subscriber to receive the free dessert.
Bob kind of like fumbled it and spilled hella milk Michelob Ultra on the free throw line. And I was just like sitting there like, damn, like it's kind of like, you know, when you mentioned like the storylines, even I think it was Gary Washburn from the Boston Globe at media day yesterday was like, asking Tatum and Brown, like, you don't want them celebrating in your building. You know, that's like kind of as part of the lead up, like, you know, and sometimes that kind of stuff's overblown, like, oh, they're celebrating your building. But at that moment, I was like, no, straight up, they're like pouring Michelob Ultra on like Lucky's face. Yo, right.
Literally,
now.
That was a version of F your couch, huh? They just had their feet all. it was wild. You know who was kind of turnt, by the way?
Many people.
Many people, but man, Steph was so lit.
I thought you were going to say Seth Cooper, the G League coach, yeah, who's Seth an assistant Cooper, coach. Yeah. He was smoking a cigar. It looked like he was on, like, IG Live or something. I was like, well, they get wild in hey, the garden.
Santa Cruz is going down, yeah. But Steph was definitely – Steph was more turnt than Draymond, believe it or not. I think Draymond was so, like
– Draymond was subdued.
Yes, he was calm. He was, like, very – he was really nice. Like, he was, like – you know, people ask him interviews, he's like, sure. And, you know, he wasn't, like, rambunctious. I was like, he must be saving it for his pod.
Or the parade.
But, yeah, it was Steph. Steph was going crazy, man. He had a cigar. He was lit. He was talking crazy. He was yelling every time he could. I was like, yo, Steph is out here trying. It was interesting to see. It wasn't – I hope Steph leans towards Kobe and just starts saying what he wants. That those final years of Kobe, I hope now he's got four championships. That he's like, man, I don't care anymore. I'm just gonna say what I want, but make sure you say it all to me.
He's been pretty good this season.
Oh yeah, he
as has, a quote,
he has been. You know, he's getting old, man. He's basically a senior citizen in the NBA, and senior citizens don't care about what they say. So he's far less guarded. I mean, he's out here with 18 minutes left, tapping his finger for the, like, give me my ring, like Aaron Donald.
To the Boston crowd.
Oh, man. Well, why does he not care?
By the way, the Celtics went on like a 12-0 run, like, yes, right after.
Right after. And it was like, yo, what?
That would be like the meme of the century if they lost the series.
It would be the new version of, remember when he, the round and back pass in 2016? It would be the new version of that. Like, oh. But, you know, he's a completely different player, and he was in complete control in this series. And, like, even in this game, you know what he was doing that was interesting that I thought that told me how he was thinking? Like, most of the series when Marcus Smart gets on him, like, he doesn't mess around with the ball. He, like, calls for the screen, like, gets him. I mean, he was, like, messing with the ball around Smart. Like, I'm just going to stand here. You're not getting the ball. A couple of times Smart got his hands on the ball. But the fact that he was willing to do it was, to me, was like, oh, he ain't worried about Marcus Smart anymore. And if he ain't worried about Marcus Smart, that's it. Because that's the only guy where he's like, okay, I got to be secure with this guy. But once he was doing that, like, dribbling to the trap corner and holding the ball, like, with Marcus Smart on him, I was like, oh, yeah. He has definitely solved the matrix.
This was up there in Draymond Green's best games ever tonight. Just because, you know, the moment we know what the Boston matchup was for him, the difficulty of what they presented, and just the way he controlled the game defensively. So many, like, tips, steals, deflections. I thought he was so locked in mentally. At one point, I saw him come out to – he was talking, I think – it was the Clay, I believe, when Clay had two fouls. It was, like, late in the first half, and he's coming over to Clay. He's like, hey, you got two. You know, don't foul. There was a point in the fourth where Steph was looking tired, and he was telling Steve to call a timeout. He was just, like, he was in full mental and physical control of the game, and he hit three jumpers. You know, he hits two threes. He hits that top of the key, that which felt it was a big mid-range jumper. You know, I think he finished with something like 12, 10, and 8, couple steals, couple blocks.
His 12 points are like 24. You got to multiply them by two just because they mean that much. Draymond was incredible. Like, even pushing it, like, he, you know, he was really smart about how he was doing it, picking when he'd go all the way, picking when he stopped at the free throw line. You know what else he was better at? Battling with Robert Williams. And some of that is probably, I mean, God bless Robert Williams, man. He's he's out there. I hope he's not jeopardizing his career.
I was going to say, are we going to hear like some really like hope, surgery needed or, you
I
know?
I really hope he didn't at least ruin next season. But, man, like, Draymond was definitely more aggressive with the blockouts and contesting at the rim. Like, he was there. Like, his length, I think one of the sneaky things about Draymond, people always underestimate how long his arms are. But Boston is so tall and athletic, it kind of didn't matter. But it felt like it mattered, especially to Jason Tatum when he's driving. Like, Draymond was in – he was incredible. This was his best defensive game. And he had kind of picked it up, but this was his best defensive game. Like, he was lights out. Jaylen Brown could not get around him this time. Like, it was like, yo, he was – he was on point, and that's, to me, where they were like, we're going to win this game. I just think they knew that Boston just didn't have anything for them, especially once they jumped out to the lead. Next thing you know, they were losing. They went on this run, and it was like, what was it, 12-0?
What? Which one?
It was like Draymond 3, Steph 3.
It was 11-0. It was 11-0 to end the first quarter, which included the Draymond 3.
That's the part. The Steph thing, you could just see it on the Celtics bench, and you could hear it in the crowd. But he had missed this. He had missed 9, and then his first 3, and they get in transition. Remember, he's driving. He gets in the air, gets kind of stuck, dumps it off to Gary Payton. And you could see for a split second, like, he just runs to the corner. Boston's like, oh, yeah. But they were too late. He has to step back 3 from the corner. And you could just see, like, Ime and them, and they were just like. It was almost like they were thinking, we can't let him get one, because if he gets one, it's over, right? Like, he's going to do it. And you could just hear it in the crowd, like, especially after Draymond's 3. It was like, oh, this dude hit 3 nails, and then you get Steph unlocked. You could just hear it in them. They were like, oh, this is a wrap, buddy. But that Celtics bitch, they were definitely depressed after that one.
Great Steve Kerr series. And I just, beyond Steve Kerr, I just think you really felt the veteran nature of their coaching staff in these playoffs this season. I mean, Mike Brown running the defense when they handed it back over to him. I mean, I don't know how many of these players need to just continue to talk about, his influence. Yeah. Kenny Atkinson, obviously he injected some of the analytics approach to this team this season. He was Jonathan Kuminga's, coach a lot of times from a developmental perspective. And, he kind of brings a different energy, different like kind of gravitas to the bench. I mean, how good is their staff? They have 2 former head coaches who got head coaching jobs this month. And then all led, kind of captained by Kerr, who he just seems so in control right now, or at least in these playoffs he did.
Man, I really think the previous 2 years, like, not only did Kerr needed him, he used them. Like, he benefited from them. Remember 15, the 15-50 year? They got, like, D'Angelo Russell and Glenn Robinson, just dudes they're never going to win with. And they're, like, running the same sets right there.
By the way, Kerr loved Glenn Robinson.
Oh, he loved it. I thought he was coming back because Kerr loved him so much. They're out there just, like, running the same stuff. It's Kai Bowman running a point. They're doing the same stuff, and it's like, why are you doing this with these guys? They're not going to win. But it was almost like Steve was still, he was trying to operate in the manner that he did when he got a team that was basically championship ready. I think 15-50, and then the following year where they, struggled and got to the play-in, I think it showed Steve, like, he had to be more hands-on. I'll never forget, remember Draymond chucks that against San Antonio, he chucks that like half court shot, and Steve's like, I probably should have told him that they don't foul. Right? Yeah. It's moments like that where Steve, where I think because for so long he was coaching superstars, his team was loaded, that it was so much more about managing those guys, especially what we now know about the unhappiness. It was more about managing those guys, and once you throw them on the court, they had to, like, excellence to win. But I think he learned and he grew as a game manager, right, as a guy who steals from the margins, right, like, who can coach without the great room for error. I think he grew as that type of coach. I think last year with guys like Kelly Oubre, right, and just – Brad Wanamaker.
Well, and the Wiseman thing.
And Wiseman, absolutely. Where it's like, yo, you have to literally manage these dudes. Like, you can't presume they know anything. Like, they haven't won before. You have to be on top of them. And I really do think that helped. It helped with Jordan Poole. It helped with Andrew Wiggins, right? It helped him, like, realize, like, even Steph, Draymond, and Klay aren't automatic machines anymore. Right,
He has to coach Draymond in certain ways.
Absolutely, Klay too, right?
The when Klay came back, and like it was awkward for a while when like Klay was just so overly eager to like get his offensive game back, and like remember Poole's rhythm was completely thrown off, and like kind of navigating that situation was difficult. Steph's rotation patterns and getting him to buy into that, eventually knowing that it would go back. And remember when he finally in LA chose like, okay, we can go back finally. Yeah. And Steph was like,
remember they lost, right? He was like, the good thing out of this is when I get my rotation.
The funny thing is, when it first happened, and I think you got the same sense as me talking to Steph, he kind of thought, all right, a couple of weeks with this. And it was like 4 months later. He was like, exactly. It was like 4 weeks or four. Anyway. But I just thought just the management of the season, the way they came in and immediately remember how good they were in the preseason?
Oh yeah.
And I remember after the first preseason game, he delivers that whole we're chasing wins this season. Yeah, yeah. But just the way he prioritized the veterans right away. When I mean, there were times in preseason where you're like, dude, play the rookies. Like, this is the time to play the rookies. But it was like, no, establish a rotation, show the team that, you know, Bielitsa matters.
Yeah, about that on this show too, right?
Yeah. So I just think that led him into that 18-2 start. And then the other thing is, and some of it was due to all the injuries, the ins and outs, but he just found so many lineup combinations, different roles for guys, to the point that, like, they got to the playoffs and, like, it just felt like, you know, you could toss a Moses Moody in because he'd been there in certain situations. Gary Payton, you know, he was just – the way he, you know, would change up starting lineups, like – Kevon Looney's playing the best basketball of his career, but he just felt late in the series it was wise to kind of toggle up the rotation. So Porter's starting, and it did seem to kind of screw with Boston's rotation because it was like, you know, Looney was still going to play as many or more minutes. Porter was still going to play the same amount of minutes. They were just going to come at the start of the half. You know
what was happening too, what Boston was doing was essentially going small when the Warriors would go big. So they were bringing in Kevon.
When Derek White
was there. They're bringing in Derek White and sitting Robert Williams. So it kind of, and you know, Looney's in there to rebound. I'm just presuming it's much easier to rebound without Robert Williams in there. But you could see, like, how they were essentially kind of getting the matchups they wanted. I know game six was a rough one for Kevon, but also I do think it sets him up to be able to end the game. Right, like if you need him and he's proven to be reliable, like you got him there at the end of the game to go with without him getting in early foul trouble or whatever like that.
Yeah, and then you go series by series. Beyond how, you know, it did seem like he really coached the regular season well. Denver series, their schemes against, like, you know, kind of let Jokic go off, control the others, work. They kind of easily cruise through that series. Memphis series, I thought he was much better than Jenkins. Jenkins had a weird series.
Especially, though, since, you know, he missed those games, right? Like, I think Mike Brown not being there showed you, like, just the difference of Steve Kerr, like, in his...
And just the pecking order where, like, yeah. Mike Brown needs to be the one, like, kind of running the defense. And to me, West Finals was, like, probably their best coaching series. Like, the way they were just going defense to defense to defense and really threw
back and forth. Yeah.
Really threw Doncic.
How many times we see them throw two fists in the air? Like,
in that series, it was insane. But then the other thing is, like, when we talk about coaching adjustments, they tried zone very early in the series, and we're like, doesn't work. When's the last time you saw Mike Brown throw two fists in the air? They just didn't do it in this Boston series. So it just... It was just a really good, well-coached season by Steve Kerr.
Well-coached season. And, like, what he was able to get out of Wiggins. I mean, think about – and, look, I'm been critical of some of these guys, like, on the record. Just him being able to throw Bielitsa into a series where he was not even playing, was not expected to play. Right, you like, guys got to be ready for that. Even now, if you look at the end of this series, right? I mean, first off, the Jordan Poole's year has been a roller coaster. Like, we know Jordan felt like, hey, man, I shouldn't be taking the back seat. I got us here, right? But you look how this series ended. Jordan Poole's not finishing these games, right? Like, it's Gary Payton. You know, to me, Steve Kerr's greatest ability is how he manages a locker room. How he gets guys to, like, stay on board, and how somehow or another, like, he finds a way to keep those end of the bench guys engaged, right? Like, it's crazy sometimes, but it his little philosophy proved everything. Once Bielitsa came into the series, you're like, what are you doing? And he was good, and then you see him in this series against Jason Tatum. It's like, how is he doing?
Did they re-sign Bielitsa? I don't know. I mean, I think you could, really.
I do think you could.
I'm not saying, like, they're probably drafting another rookie 28th, and, like, but you know.
I do think if you got a veteran spot open, you probably go with a more true center. Just a third center.
Do you?
I know, right?
If a formula works, I mean, how about Otto Porter, by the way?
I was thinking you could use Otto Porter spot with that if you're presuming you're going to get more minutes out of the rookies.
I would say roster spots most vulnerable are probably JTA, Damian Lee.
Yeah, but I also, I mean, they probably need a few more of those guys.
Yeah. I don't know. That this is a conversation. Yeah, this is a conversation for another day. you know, and with just to wrap up the Kerr Myers conversation, it's funny they were out on the court post game in the conversation that we were talking about earlier. But they started talking about one of them said, I think Steve said to Bob, oh, it's so much better to clinch on the road, you know, because they were talking about, you know, if it's at home, guys celebrate quick, but then they go home. Everyone kind of goes their separate ways. But he's like, on the road, we can, you know, come out here, celebrate. There's less distractions than they went. And they currently, I mean, at this point, it's about 5 a.m., but they're probably still partying together. But it was, what was funny was they were like laughing and debating it. And I said something about, I was like, you know, it was probably good to at least close once in Oracle just to have that moment where you close in Oracle. They're like, yeah, that was good. But, you know, and then they started comparing Cleveland to Boston, like clinching here. And then they're like, Kerr just looked at me and said, first world problems,
baby. Where would you prefer to clinch?
Yes. This is the third city.
I thought you were going to tell the other story we heard right then.
No, I'm not.
I was about to be like, wow, you going to really tell that?
It is 5 a.m. I'm a little delirious, but that one I will not. Any final thoughts before get us out of here?
Final thoughts. Like Gary Payton II and Andrew Wiggins should not be eating in the Bay Area, not be paying to eat in the Bay Area for a long time. Like,
by the way,
incredible.
By the way, Jordan Poole too. Like, what a playoffs! I know this was a tough series for him. He actually figured it out late in this series, and like had huge impact the last three wins. Like in short spurts, big shots, offensive juice. They were plus 21 in his first like seven minutes.
Plus 23 in his first 7 minutes. Right, I thought his threes were back. Like, because remember they were up 14-2. Boston was, and this was it. Right, like this was your last hurrah. And you're putting all this energy into stopping Steph. You got Clay scuffling a little bit at that point. And it's like, what are Warriors going to do? And they bring in Jordan Poole and bang, bang. Like, he makes three of his first four threes. And
he had 11 like, pretty quick.
Yeah, it was just like, what? He had the drive with the little flip, and he missed a couple. But it's just like, how do you keep coming? Jordan Poole makes you feel like, geez, like they just keep bringing in dudes we can't guard, right? Like it's just there's no release, there's no let up. I thought he was great in the series in limited minutes. He didn't play. Did he play the entire second quarter? I think he put him in. I mean, the entire first quarter, he came in towards the end.
He came in when it turned.
Yeah, and then the third quarter, I don't think he played to the end. I think he was riding GP too.
Well, I think they got to the point that they were like up a significant amount. They're like win it with defense, you know, and that's.
But it's like for him to sit all that time, he was playing well, and then to come back in and still kind of get after it, like that was – I mean, he was impressive in just how he, you know, well, he grew.
Yes.
He matured.
I agree. I mean, the whole playoffs, I mean, he started the first round and basically kept Steph Curry as a sixth man for a while because he was playing so well. You look at their eight guys they played tonight, we can kind of wrap here. But the three main stars, you know, Draymond, Clay, Steph – Looney, who we haven't even mentioned enough, but, like, the playoffs he had were insane. I mean, the 22-rebound game against Memphis to close out the Grizzlies.
I mean, saving performances.
He had Mavericks fans, like, squealing for a Kevon Looney by the time that Dallas series was over. I mean, better than Draymond for the first half of this series. Oh, yeah, I mean, question. The game four that they won.
He got Draymond benched.
Yeah, he did. So, you know, that's the fourth. The fifth starter is Wiggins. We've talked about his playoffs. So that's five starters who all you're coming out going of these playoffs like great, you know, performances. And then there are three bench players tonight, Payton, Poole, and Porter.
Four.
Yeah, I guess.
Andre Iguodala.
What'd you think about the Iguodala like final 60 seconds?
I wrote about it. I thought it was very interesting how Celtics pulled their starters and Steve didn't. And it was like, a hat tip to the big three. It was like, hey, y'all got us here. You finish it out. You be on the court for this. And then I text Steve because I forgot to ask him. I was like, no way he's going to respond at the party. But he did. But he was like, yeah, he thought Andre deserved to be out there with him. Like, they were going to win this championship, and they did this. They put in the work, and they should be on the court when it's official. So he put Andre in to spend that last minute. It might have been the last minute of his career.
I was just about to ask you, I mean, neither of us know for sure, but Would you guess?
Nah, I think that's it. Andre's got some huge, huge things he's doing, and I don't know if being on the end of a bench is one of them.
Man, they could use him, though. You see, like, the lectures he's given throughout the series?
Need him on the coaching staff, yeah, but I just think, man, Andre's like...
He could be Mike Brown. He could take Mike Brown's seat tomorrow.
If he does that, Andre would be... I mean, he could probably do both, but, like, his designs are just huge. Like, they're not assistant coach plans. Right,
but. You are correct. But, all right, well, we need to get out of here.
Good season. Good season. You did great this year.
Can I get a mid-level exception or something?
Bro, you're already getting the max. You want the mid-level exception too?
We will talk to you, I don't know, at some point. You know, we got drafts coming next week, free agency after that, so we'll talk to you at
some point. Next plus minus will be from a parade float.
Maybe. Talk to you then.